Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, January 4th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? In that particular chapter, the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link. Download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files or shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've been calling in to give powerful testimonials about how the use of those tools has improved the quality of their life. I should remind us, I don't talk about this very much, but there is also a website that was created a few years ago now, mindshiftersacademy.org, and it's another place where you can get access to some of these same files. It's a little bit easier to search for some of the audio files there. It's not nearly as many of them as the archive of the show. For the past, I guess it's 11 years. And you can also find access there to the information about how to join us on our Tuesday and Thursday night support groups. I need to remind people that there's separate login information for Tuesday and Thursday night. But everything you need to join us, if you're so inclined, it's absolutely free. Join us for the Mindshifter support groups Tuesday and Thursday evening from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we'd be happy to have you join us yourself or pass that information along to somebody that you know that might be interested. In those support groups, we listen to an hour of inspirational work from one of our favorite teachers, whether it's Michael Rice or Guy Finley or Dale Ellen Hoffman, etc. And then we have the rest of the 2.5 hours for worksheets or discussion, reviewing worksheets people have done throughout the week, etc. So we're here at the beginning of the year, and we're still deciding what we'll do as a project for this year, if indeed we take on a project to do a little something every day. There's been the recommendation that we do the Way of Mastery throughout the year, and that's the primary suggestion that's on the table. And I may begin that next week if that remains at the top of the list. Yesterday we were talking about several books by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy, and one of them is The Jesus Mysteries that was published in 1999. And I was talking about how worse than just a neutral distraction it is to try and take some of these powerful spiritual teachings, to take them literally. And what they do in that book is talk about how the history that's been uncovered by people like Joseph Campbell is that the ancient mysteries that go way, way beyond 2,000 years ago and the beginning of Christianity had the same anatomy. And I'll just read a little bit from the intro to that book that was written in 1999. The various myths of the different godmen of the mysteries share what the great mythologist Joseph Campbell called, quote, the same anatomy, close quote. Just as every human is physically unique, yet it is possible to talk of the general anatomy of the human body. So, with these different myths, it's also possible to see both their uniqueness and their fundamental sameness. A helpful comparison may be the relationship between Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet and Bernstein's West Side Story. One is a 16th century English tragedy about wealthy Italian families, while the other is a 20th century American musical about street gangs. On the face of it, they look very different, yet they are essentially the same story. Similarly, the tales told about the godmen of the pagan mysteries are essentially the same, although they take different forms. The more we studied the various versions of the myth of Osiris Dionysus, the more it became obvious that the story of Jesus had all the characteristics of this perennial tale. At the heart of the mysteries are the myths concerning a dying and resurrecting godman who was known by many different names. In Egypt, he was Osiris. In Greece, he was Dionysus. In Asia Minor, he was Attis. In Syria, he was Adonis. In Italy, he was Bacchus, and in Persia, he was Mithras. Fundamentally, all these godmen are the same mythological being. So in this book, we'll use the combined name Osiris Dionysus to denote his universal and composite nature. So here are a list of the points that if you look event by event, we found we were able to construct Jesus' supposed biography from the mythic motifs that were previously used to relate to Osiris Dionysus. Point number one, Osiris Dionysus is God made flesh, the Savior and the Son of God. Point number two, his father is God and his mother is a mortal virgin. Point number three, he is born in a cave or humble cowshed on December 25th before three shepherds. Point number four, Osiris Dionysus offers his followers the chance to be born again through the rites of baptism. Number five, he miraculously turns water into wine at a marriage ceremony. Number six, Osiris Dionysus rides triumphantly into town on a donkey while people wave palm leaves to honor him. Next, Osiris Dionysus dies at Easter time as a sacrifice for the sins of the world. Next, Osiris Dionysus, after his death, descends to hell, and then on the third day rises again from the dead and ascends to heaven in glory. Next, Osiris Dionysus, his followers await his return as the judge during the last days. And finally, Osiris Dionysus' death and resurrection are celebrated by a ritual meal of bread and wine, which symbolize his body and blood. This is from ancient Egypt, hundreds if not thousands of years before the story of Yeshua or Jesus. These are just some of the motifs that are shared between the tales of Osiris Dionysus and the biography of Jesus. Why are these remarkable similarities not common knowledge? Well, because as we were to discover later, the early Roman Church did everything in its power to prevent us from perceiving them. It systematically destroyed pagan sacred literature in a brutal campaign of eradicating the mysteries, which is the name for this body of wisdom, the pagan mysteries. It was a task it performed so completely that today paganism is regarded as a dead religion. Although surprising to us now, to the writers of the first centuries CE, these similarities between the new Christian religion and the ancient mysteries were extremely obvious. Pagan critics of Christianity, such as the satirist Celsus, complained that this recent religion was nothing more than a pale reflection of their own ancient teachings. Early church fathers, such as Justin Martyr, Tertullian, and Irenaeus, were understandably disturbed, and they resorted to the desperate claim that these similarities were the result of diabolical mimicry. They used one of the most absurd arguments ever advanced, and they accused the devil of plagiarism by anticipation. They accused the devil of deviously copying the true story of Jesus before it had actually happened in an attempt to mislead the gullible. Other Christian commentators have claimed that the myths were of the mysteries were like pre-echoes of the literal coming of Jesus, somewhat like premonitions or prophecies. This is a little bit more generous version of the diabolical mimicry theory, but it's no less off the mark. So, these are some of the things that you can find in the book, The Jesus Mysteries, The Laughing Jesus, and Jesus and the Lost Goddess, books by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy. And the point of them is not to say that the teachings are off the mark, but that taking them literally misses a lot of the depth and the richness and the original teachings, which are all about personal growth, realization of your spiritual nature, realization of the unity of our awareness, the mind, body, energy system, etc. So that's what I was referring to yesterday, and that's a little bit of clarification from those three books written in 99, 2001, and 2005. And I'm preemptively turning on the microphone for Susan. Are you there?
I am there. Dr. Tim, that is wild stuff. I'm not going to send it to my daughter, who's an Episcopal priest. I just think that would be...
And there's no reason to, because anybody who wants to take that stuff literally is going to do that. That's their, that's their teaching and their belief and programming. I have people in my own family that... if they got a hold of this show, they would just be horrified. And yet,
right.
I can't turn away from scholars like this. And these are certainly not the only two that I've, Peter Gandy and Timothy Freke, they're not the only two scholars like this that I've been introduced to. But, if you get a book like that, there's 328 pages in that book, and only, 248 are the book. The rest are the annotated notes and bibliography and references to all the research they did to come up with what they wrote.
Yep.
So, you know, there's, you know, almost a fourth of the book is just, here, go look this up for yourself.
Right.
Here are the other authors.
See why they...
here are the original, you know, documents and scrolls, and here are the other academics who have studied. So, you know, they understand the heretical nature of what they're putting forward, and they understand how, we'll say, challenging it would be for most people who were raised in one of those traditions to even consider that what they're saying is the truth. But as I was mentioning
right.
to you yesterday, you know, if you go to, if you talk to born-again Christians or fundamental Christians today and you ask them what they know about, let's say, the religion of Islam and Muhammad, they will give you what they learned by reading from books that their ministers recommended or what they got in a Christian bookstore. And that would be
mm-hmm.
like trying to find out about the indigenous Americans, the Native American Indians, by reading the history books that we had up until about the 1990s. And
yeah.
and that's just plain garbage. It was stuff that was written by newspaper men who were sensationalizing the stories, and the white man is the civilized and the red man is the, you know, basically an animal and a savage. And so that's what you're going to get when you go to listen to anybody who's Christian talk about the pagan religions. That's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
All they were taught was horrible blood sacrifices and, you know, praying to gods that don't exist and basically idiocy. That's what we're told. We're told that anybody who is a pagan is rejecting the truth, believe in any higher power or any god. And, of course, it's not the way it was. That civilization at its highest levels was built around these pagan mysteries, these spiritual teachings that are at the root of almost every deep spiritual teaching that's available today.
What did you say toward the end of your presentation? You were reading, gosh, it's interesting, and then you said, this points to the fact that we are invited to do our own work. Or you said something, I want to catch what you said, because it was a wonderful, it's like you took the pin out of the grenade. You just went down below all that to say, these are all tools to show us how to grow or have a relationship with God or something, but I'm just putting together. Do you remember what you said?
I think I said very, very much what you just said, that if I take the stories that any religion will give me as literal, I miss the deep truths that are there that are designed to help us understand that we're connected to the one mind, that we're part of this collective consciousness, that we have more to us than just our physical being, and that we can grow in that spiritual awareness with a variety of tools that aren't tied to one religion or another.
You know, this dovetails perfectly with what you were talking about letting go of. Well, maybe you started something, and I mentioned Corinne Zupko, and I sent you her thing. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but she is trying to let go of the tools and vehicles she has depended on for so long in order to have a direct dialogue with her creator, with our creator, the creator. And it has caused her a lot of angst or you know, it's been wonderful, a real growing thing, but this is another way of inviting us go of the things we've been hanging on to without saying there's nothing there. We're saying, look how rich this is. There's everything there. But it may not be the way we thought it was.
So this is leading into my second offering for today, and this is from Corinne Zupko. She says, I'm writing this 2021 year-end reflection for myself while sharing it with others in case it's helpful. This post is part of my process of moving forward after a tumultuous year. 2021 presented some of the most challenging experiences of my life. As of today, it has also earned the top spot as a year that facilitated warp speed growth that I can still barely wrap my head around. Pain can be an incredible catalyst for transformation if you allow it. By allowing it, that pain brought me to new places. Every time a difficult feeling arose, I went into it with a defenselessness, I would use the word openness, and willingness to see whatever it was that I needed to see. She writes, I explored the depths and hidden recesses of that pain with the Holy Spirit. I did not turn away. I did not numb. I did not suppress. Being a dedicated student of A Course in Miracles for the last 25 years, I can now see that I had narrowed my ideas of how healing should be facilitated and how it should look. Little did I know that in 2021, Jesus would blow that self-imposed limit wide open for me. A series of events happened that at times brought me to my knees, and rather than cling to A Course in Miracles and what it says, or more accurately, what I think it says, I was being asked by Jesus to let it all go, to let the book go, to let all the words go, to let identification, my identification as A Course in Miracles student and teacher, let it all go. Instead, I was being asked to trust him, or I would say trust the teaching, trust it directly, to hear him directly, being that my spiritual foundation is based on this book, and I've been working with it for my entire adult life, letting go was as scary as hell. Once again, I felt like I was in the scene from the movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Indiana Jones needs to step out into what appears to be a bottomless chasm in a radical act of faith. One thing the Course has given me is a deep sense of trust in guidance and in my relationship with the Holy Spirit and Jesus. So because I had that trust, I obliged. I let go. I let the Course go. I didn't know if I would or could teach it anymore. I just stepped out into the chasm. With other stressors and challenges unfolding in addition to the feeling of a spiritual rug having been removed from underneath me, I promptly fell apart, she writes with parentheses, while never falling into debilitating anxiety, which was of significant note for me, close parens. What felt like my spiritual backbone for so long was gone. But in the falling apart, something beautiful happened. Just as Indiana Jones steps out and finds that there is an invisible pathway beneath him to walk across the seeming chasm, I fell apart with a deep sense of knowing that I was going to be put back together, but not based on what I think A Course in Miracles says. Instead, I was guided to allow myself to be rebuilt directly by Spirit, to be shown through my experience rather than my own understanding of words. My initiation into this process required a radical act of faith, my willingness to let my spiritual path go. All sense of rigidity and clinging to teachings needed to go. My ideas of what it meant to be spiritual needed to go. My identities in this world had to be released again. Much has happened during this year of allowing myself to be rebuilt by the Holy Spirit. To my surprise, I was led into various healing modalities that have literally moved mountains for me, EMDR, which stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing, which is a trauma reduction technique. Family therapy. Constellation therapy, which we've talked about on this internet show numerous times, just to name a few. Jesus had been working quite powerfully for me through these modalities in ways that have often left me speechless. She writes, quote, hidden cornerstones, close quotes, of unforgiveness have been exposed. Ancient hatred has been revealed, and patterns that would often hijack me had their roots uncovered. All of this was being shown to me at an almost overwhelming pace to bring it to Holy Spirit for rapid healing. When fire obliterates the landscape as we know it, the clearing allows seeds that lay dormant deep in the soil to grow and flourish into new life. When ego layers burn away, what emerges is what has always been there, our unobstructed relationship with the divine. The Divine Mother often reveals herself to us in the most challenging of times. In 2021, my most significant relationship has emerged. I had an experience where I felt Jesus bow his head, extend his arm, and silently say in introduction, "I'll just let the two of you take it from here." At that moment, I had the tidal wave experience of his mother, our mother. She showed up for me because I needed her more than anything, and I know that my embodiment of two characteristics helped facilitate this process. Those characteristics are honesty and open-mindedness. She cites Course in Miracles, manual 4.11 and 4.4, or 4. No, I don't. Anyway, she's got in this blog post Course in Miracles citations for openness and honesty, open-mindedness and honesty. And then she quotes Course in Miracles. She says, "Since I picked up Course in Miracles in 1997, I seek not to hide anything from spirit. Every fearful or judgmental thought that goes through my mind, I name and I own. I take responsibility for it. I recognize that it's not that I'm going to stop having ego-based thoughts, but I have none that I would keep." So it's basically giving up my attachment to this negative or ego-based thought. And then for open-mindedness, she says, "My involvement in the series The Love Lens, Conversations on A Course in Miracles, Racism and the United Mind, or the Unified Mind, has changed my path of life. Learning from Course and non-Course students in black and brown bodies has shown me the entire perception that my entire perception involves a lens that is influenced by my being in a white body. It's another ego layer that needs to be seen to be undone. Embodying open-mindedness is necessary if we truly desire to awaken. Through the turmoil of 2021, an additional life-altering insight and experience arose, the recognition that I am an antenna. I believe that many, if not most people with anxiety, are also antennas. We are highly intuitive, but our abilities are underdeveloped or undeveloped, and so we often pick up on other people's stuff, mistaking it as our own. In any situation that produces uneasy feelings, I now ask myself, what is mine and what is not mine? And this has been a game-changing question. Sorting through the answer enables me to look at what is mine with spirit and release what is not mine to spirit. And what about my relationship with A Course in Miracles? Well, it's in my blood and bones. It's the operating system through which I see the world. I can't not live it as a part of who I am. It is fully alive in my daily life. However, I see that my relationship to the Course is growing and changing as I relate to it in a more embodied and grounded way. I don't usually give much meaning to New Year's or our making of time is artificial as time is one moment that seemingly extends forward and backwards. But on New Year's Eve at midnight, I cried. I'm so relieved to leave the challenges of 2021 behind, and at the same time I feel filled with gratitude for all the gifts that arose. I am meeting 2022 with an open heart and abundant willingness. I truly look forward to sharing more with you. There is much more to come. One of the things I love about my weekly A Course in Miracles study group is how we all benefit from sharing our experiences and insights. If any of this post resonated with you, or if you feel you had a significant shift in 2021, I'd love to hear about it in the comments below. With love, Corinne. And so then I said, okay, so what is this that she's talking about when she's referring to I just lost it. I'm scrolling to try and find it. Do you remember what I said? It was, anyway, she's learning from black and brown bodies, and she started a pretty much an online seminar, I think. And I have to find it so I can read some of that.
That's not the same as her weekly phone, sort of like the radio show, an interactive, like a conference call. She's talking about something else.
Yes, here it is. The Love Lens. So if you Google the Love Lens, L-E-N-S. So there's a Facebook page that she created. So if you get to it through her website from anxietytolove.com, and if you look at it, she's doing conversations on A Course in Miracles, Racism, and the Unified Mind. She's doing it with Yolanda Botts, Freedom Cartwright, and Corinne Zupko. And so far, the pillars of the Love Lens are trust the process, be honest, be patient and kind, be joyful, be defenseless, be open-minded, be willing, be transparent. And then she's had a series of episodes. I don't know how we can get to them, but the first one is answering the call, I can't sit this out. And there are three other people with Corinne on that video. And that's about an hour video. So apparently you can get access to these through her website. And then there's episode two and then episode three and et cetera. Slavery and Racism, the Ultimate Forms of Separation. And then episode two is Unpacking the Shadow Side. So wonderful stuff. I have no idea how she got into it, but she is embracing the fact that there are people with black and brown skin who've been subjected to all kinds of mistreatment, but they also do either Course in Miracles work or similar spiritual work, and she's learning from them. They're sharing together and growing together.
Yolanda was one of the people on her conference call, and she called in the radio show at one point and talked about how badly she felt about some perceived racial slant that you had taken. I don't know if you remember that. It was kind of uncomfortable.
That who
you
had
prayed
taken?
About it. What?
Oh, that I had taken? Yes. Yes. With Yolanda, that was simply a matter of there's an old story about the good wolf and the bad wolf. But when I first heard it years and years ago, it was about the black wolf and the white wolf. And this is from a Native American, you know, anthology that I had picked up in high school, which is, you know, almost 50 years ago now. And so, or it's over 50 years ago because I had it before I graduated high school. So anyway, the point is, Yolanda had come on and mentioned that this was perpetuating the stereotype that black is bad. And since, you know, in this culture, even though people's skin isn't black as a color, it's darker, and they're referred to as blacks or they're referred to as African Americans, etc. And so she was just saying this is, you know, perpetuating that stereotype that black is bad and white is good. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I understand that. And then it probably was over a year later when it came up again, and I didn't pay attention to it, and I used the reference of the black wolf and the white wolf again, and Yolanda spoke up and said, this is upsetting, and I helped her work through her upset. And then I acknowledged that, yeah, that was a misstep on my part. I had agreed to not perpetuate that with that prejudice anymore, with that lens that says, you know, that the unsavory emotions are dark. They're just the same as any other emotion. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, since then, and I have worked on it even before that. It was a slip of the tongue. It was the old conditioning coming through. I had taken to just talking about there's a good wolf and there's a bad wolf. No color is needed to invite, you know, because the good wolf has the love and the compassion and the charity and the gratitude, and the bad wolf has all the negative emotions and the anger and vengeance and bitterness, et cetera. So that's what you were referring to.
I was, and Yolanda was a regular on Corinne's show, so I'm surmising that one of the reasons Corinne got into this is she was confronted. You know, Yolanda's a gentle woman. She was great about it, but she was an active participant in this discussion, and I'm just imagining that it woke Corinne up to the whole issue, and now look what she's doing with it, which is wonderful. It's also very timely.
So I thank you for that reference. I've reached out to her and asked her if she's willing to share with the On Your Mind podcast people again what this has done for her and where it's taken her this year, and we'll see if she's up to doing another interview.
Oh, that's great.
And I will,
that's good.
And I will take a look at this series that she has on her website, From Anxiety to Love. It's called The Love Lens, L-E-N-S. And I'm grateful to find out here that she's got them posted. So you can go listen to the first however many. I think they have 8 scheduled, and I think they've got 4, 5, or 6 of them done already.
Yeah. Yeah, those were
a
wonderful
session. Yeah, 7 of them.
Session. Yeah.
And episode 8 is coming soon. So did you participate in those 7 sessions?
I did. Oh, not in those. I used to call into this interactive thing, and I like them very much, but they are at 8 o'clock at night, and you know I don't come to things when they're that late. I just, my brain cells are settling down for the night, and it was just too much to stay up till 9 o'clock, and so I stopped listening, even though it was a terrific resource, a small cadre of cohorts on there who meet regularly and discuss The Course in Miracles, and I know that is changing shape. She is now, she has, sort of like you and Michael Rice, you are a student of his, but you branched off into your own radio show using his material and giving him credit all the time. She has several students who are now going to be conducting some or perhaps all of these discussions, because I think Corinne feels that she needs to change what she's doing. I'm not sure she's going to be there or run them sometimes or what. She's doing a lot of changes. But it does seem, it's amazing that I had come to the conclusion after several years of doing the course that this year I would not be doing it lesson by lesson every day, but would set up something else. And that's why the way of mastery has come forward in my mind, partly because you were mentioning it. And I have the book right here, and I read the first, just the intro. Even the intro, it's like everything in there is a piece of enlightened work that carries some kind of intrinsic power, healing power. And, you know, or maybe that's just my experience and my belief of it, but I'm excited about going back into that. She sounds as if she's going out and without any tethers at all and just seeing what happens, which is very brave.
which means what you're saying is, if you did it, you would have to have a lot of courage.
Right. And I do have some questions, but they're sort of, well, they, one of them is taken out of something she said, which is what stuff is the other person's stuff and what stuff is my stuff? And I know Michael is emphatic about, if you're feeling something, it's your stuff. And she's saying she feels stuff and it's not her stuff. And maybe both are true. I mean, I'm looking at the fact that...
Yeah, that's what you've got to... You've got to step into that, right? Well, in the first place, we're just using words. And those words have certain meanings for us. And they may not have the same meaning for somebody else. If you listen to Michael Rice and you listen carefully and closely over the years, you're going to find that he says he is... His position on that has been formulated because he's dealt with so many people who were using the term empath as an excuse to not do their own work. And a lot of those people were bulls in china shops and insensitive. And so that's how Michael formulated that. And it means a certain thing to him. But that doesn't have to mean that Judith Orloff, who wrote, you know, the book on the Empath Survival Guide, or someone like Corinne Zupko, who understands and has done a tremendous amount of her own personal work and understands that she is far more sensitive than the average person, that there can be great value in understanding that. And this idea of what is mine and what is not mine, and as Corinne's talking about, I'm going to bring what's mine to the Holy Spirit, and I'm going to give what isn't mine to the Holy Spirit. If you, you know, if you had the two of them sit together, and if each of them could hear out the other's perspective, my hunch is they would be agreeing on most of this. There's so much about owning. Deep owning, and what I just read from Corinne Zupko's work, you know, and how she's had this open-mindedness and this honesty, and she's revealed within herself deep, dark cornerstones of prejudice and hatred, and that she's unveiled within herself. That's exactly what Michael Rice is talking about and calling us to do with the worksheet process or the three early memories of forgiveness, or for three early memories of conflict, or the what he calls the mind shifter tool, which is targeted journaling. It's exactly that. Do a deep dive into what's going on in my mind-body energy system that's resulting in a distorted perception that keeps me from seeing my true nature as love, and the true nature as love, or the energy of creation extending around me through every person that I encounter. So, you know, I don't think you're going to, although you might catch literal words and say, oh, they differ here, I think if you were able to really hear them, if each of them was able to engage with the other with complete open-mindedness and honesty, I think you'd find out they're saying almost exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So we had somebody raise a hand. Should I open their microphone?
Oh, yes, of course.
Area code 541, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Yes, Dr. Tam and Susan. This is Celinda. How
are
you? Hey, Susan. I know. You're so close to my heart, both of you. So, Dr. Tim, I want to offer my gratitude one more time for your opening me to the Course in Miracles, not the Course in Miracles, which I found the languaging difficult for me, but the Way of Mastery, because I just started it. I'm going to study it over the course of a year. It speaks to my heart. And also, in conjunction with that, when I was at the secondhand store a few weeks ago, there were on the free shelf outside, there were put two little books, both the same book, called One Word. It's a very tiny book, One Word That Changes Your Life. And it was two brand new copies. I snatched up both of them because for some reason I was told to snatch up both of them, and I brought them home. And basically what it is a practice of taking one word a year, only one word, not a phrase, nothing, and of focusing on that and allowing the Holy Spirit and our own inner wisdom together co-create a pathway using that one word that will help us to become more of who we already are. And so I wanted to share that with you. The last thing I want to share with you both is that when you talked about the white wolf and the black wolf, I try to be as global as possible in my spiritual travels in relation to those people that I recognize, I believe that I recognize on a soul level, are doing their very best to practice the presence of God or Allah or whatever you want to call it. So the understanding I have from Qigong is that yin-yang, the white and black symbol, that in the Eastern mind, that literally means the sunny side of the mountain and the shadow side of the mountain. It has nothing to do with good or evil, or any kind of judgment. It's just simply a reference point, and that both are essential and both exist. And it's how I see the middle path. So I wanted to share that with you because for me it's the middle path that's freedom. And you hit on it, Susan, when you said maybe they're both true and they're both not true. You know, they're just that expanding place of where I'm growing, that it's the middle path. It's integration. It's cohesiveness. It's the expanded vision and the delight that we are all so diverse and yet so one. It's blowing me away. I love it.
All right. Well, that's all valid. And, of course, that's the golden mean, the middle path, you know, the story of the Buddha, who did the extremes, right? The extremes of wealth and the physical adornments and satisfying the physical appetites, and then the extreme of deprivation and fasting and to the point of near starvation, and then discovering that, you know, neither one of those is the way. The way is the middle, the golden mean, the middle path. Because this is our life. It's not a one-dimensional thing. So that idea of the black and white and the yin-yang and the middle path has nothing to do with what Yolanda was talking about. Yolanda was talking about how in our culture, with our history of slavery, this entire culture built on slavery, the black as bad carries a connotation that is not going away anytime soon. So every time we add to that myth, with a story of the black wolf or the white wolf, it's just another reference to black is bad. Whereas, you know, the we don't need to keep adding to that myth. We can talk about it and make the same point without any color reference.
Yes, and that's why the shadow and the sunny side and the shadow side has no, in the Eastern mind, no reference to, no connection to that good or bad. And I totally understood your point in the beginning. The one thing I really enjoy, one of the many things I really enjoy about Michael Rice's presentation is when he talks about the world's cheap copies. I've been reflecting on that a lot, you know, the copy, and I've realized that the world cheap copy for freedom is conform is control, and the world's cheap copy for freedom is conformity rather than diversity or allowing. And so it goes on and on. We can play in the jungles of our mind for as long as we want to, but it's whatever brings us closer to spirit until we come to the point of realizing it is the path of the heart, and the intellect is supposed to be helping us, not running the boat bus.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you very much, and you too, Susan.
Thanks, Linda. Hey, I wanted to ask you a quick question about this word. Do you provide your word?
Yes. You meditate, you prepare your heart so that the word can be dropped into you. A lot of many words will come and go. And they said, don't worry about it because it's a practice. If you end up, your ego ends up choosing a word for the year, the Holy Spirit will use it just fine. But the practice also allows you to open, as you've been talking about on the show, Dr. Tim, allows us to open more and more and more expansively to the Holy Spirit's guidance and the wisdom that Yeshua or Jesus taught us during his lifetime, and allow us to expand to where more and more that word comes more and more in alignment with the word that Spirit or our Creator is thinking. I hate to use all these, I don't hate anything. It's confusing sometimes to use all these different aspects of God's names, but the Holy Spirit can use more and more, open you up to the one word that would be the most appropriate for the year. It's a growth process. It's a delightful book, and mine for the year is abide. That's my word that came up, and many words came up. But then I opened the A Way of Mastery, and the first page had three abide sentences in it, and I thought, oh, that's got to be it for the year, because you don't see that word very often.
Mm-hmm.
And I am complete. Thank you so much, both of you.
Well, you're quite welcome and deserving. Thank you for the call. And perhaps starting next Monday, we'll start reading through the Way of Mastery, since there's two solid requests for that.
And Dr. Tim, you've created audio files of those, so if you ever needed a break, you could put yourself on and just read.
Yeah, that's the truth. It's it does take some editing and uploading to get them to play on the internet show, but you're right. I do have access to those files, and I have shared them over the years with the support group, beginning with the mm-hmm. Tuesday group 18 years ago. And
wow. Well, they're
so
beautifully written, and I mean beautifully read. And I have often wondered if you've ever thought of finishing the books, because I think you didn't do all the books. Right.
I think I have recorded through lesson 31.
Okay. Yeah.
If memory serves, that's how far it got.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're good. I still have them on my iPhone. So...
Well, you're one of the lucky ones because with my last website crash, I lost the ability to just give people a link and have them listen to them. So now if people want them, I have to upload them to Google Drive and send them an individual link. And it's not as convenient. But for years, I had them on a hidden page on my website because I was concerned they didn't want to violate anybody's copyright. And in the beginning of each of the lessons, I say, you know, go to the Christ Mind or ShantiCristo.com and find out more about this. But nowadays, it's up there on ChristMind.info, and people have most, if not all of it, on YouTube on videos, so I don't need to worry about the copyright. And now that I don't need to worry about it anymore, and I could make it an open page on my website, that website crashed and is gone. So so the servers that have that on it are not available to the public right now.
And Dr. Tim, would you ever consider running some of those longer sessions that JM did? So I know the Way of
the
Master.
Darshans?
Yeah, right, the Darshans.
Would I consider running them where?
Well, just on the radio show points or sections of them. I've never listened to the Darshans, and they are available, right? Anybody can go get them off their website.
I don't know how much is available the way I have them. Originally when it came out, I think it was in 2011, you had to be on the list and pay some money and you got the updates, and then there was a window of time where you could download them, and then they disappeared.
Oh, wow.
And I don't have all of them, but I have probably 90% of them. What I've been hearing from some people who've been finding this stuff recently is that on YouTube there are excerpts from the Darshans that JM has put up there. So I don't know how much is available the way I have them, which is, you know, each of the Darshans, the full session. But
wow.
Again, that's another thing that we've done from time to time in the Thursday support group. We did it in the live Tuesday group. We did a full year and a half of them. I think we did, we did 75 Darshans.
Wow.
And that was just the first book.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As odd as it might seem, he took 75 hour-long sessions, or a little over an hour, close to an hour, to talk about the first 12 books.
Wow. And those are his meditations. That's not channeling.
That's him sitting in a room of people in Bali and talking about the text. Sometimes word by word, sometimes line by line. But, you know, when I slowly, carefully read the first lesson, it takes me 33 minutes or whatever. He spent over 5 hours talking about that 33 minutes.
Wow.
And he doesn't read the whole thing word for word. He'll jump around and he'll find a paragraph, and he'll leave 3 or 4 or 5 paragraphs that didn't seem as poignant to him, but he'll jump into a paragraph and then spend 45 minutes talking about that paragraph. So that's what the Darshans are. It's a very deep dive into the actual teaching of the Way of Mastery. And, of course, the Way of Mastery is intended to be a way for us to start birthing the mind of Christ, each of us individually. Make it alive, make it a living practice. So thank you for letting me turn on your microphone and chatting. And thank you to Celinda for her comment or question there in the last few minutes. And I will mute you and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim.
Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, January the 4th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. I hear you through the wall, but not on the phone.
You hear me through the wall, but not through the window? Okay, there. Is that better, sweetie?
Much better.
Cool. All right. Well, welcome. Honored, delighted that you're here. Feeling much appreciation for every ear that listens to this show and passes it on to someone else, for every person that's ready and willing to dig in deeply and do their work. You've heard me in the past talk about a story that they tell about crabs. And I was talking to someone this morning, doing some processing with someone this morning privately, and they were talking about how, you know, it was so hard to break loose of these beliefs about self, about life, about family, about the body, you know, everything. And I shared with her the story of how you keep crabs in a bucket when you go crabbing. And if you put one crab in the bucket, the crab will crawl out. But if you put two crabs in the bucket, you don't need a lid. You know, you'd be concerned because if one crab tries to crawl out, the other crab will drag them back in. If you put 10 crabs in a bucket, nobody's escaping from that bucket because if one tries to crawl out, he'll be pulled back in by the others. But the insight that came to me this morning, as I was talking to this person, you know, I thank her for her questions and the process that we did, but the insight was that when you realize, you know, in the ancient Aramaic, they said, the sins of the father, do you remember that word sin just means energetic patterns that are off the mark, it's an archery term. The sins of father will be passed down into 3 and 4 generations of those who are separated from love. The quote is, the Greek translator says, those who hate me, the creator saying those who hate me, but it's not hate as in a love-hate relationship. Those who cannot bring love present to their minds are going to be stuck with the patterns of the generations. You know, if you go back that 4 generations, and you know, whoever told us that literally there were 4 generations of thoughts in our genes. Every thought, every feeling, every reality, every perceptual construct stored in the genetics, they're ready to be resonated into activity, and if we allow it, to take over our lives. 4 generations, when you add it up and you put yourself in the equation, that's 31 lives. But remember mathematical progression. You know, 4 becomes 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 250, 40, whatever it is, on and on you go. And if you, when you get to 30 generations, you've got 1.6 billion people in your bloodline. And when it comes to ego states, it's like a bucket of crabs. If you try to crawl out of the bucket, if you try to crawl out of the family pattern, I was mentioning, you know, a couple of years ago, we were talking with Peter in Sweden, and there was a thing that we did some research on and found it wasn't actually codified into law, but in he believed that it was a codified law within the country of Sweden, and it was called the Janta Law. And the Janta Law, I don't remember any of the details about it, but basically it was a writing that said, don't think you're better than us. Don't think you'll ever do any better than us. And, you know, basically it was like a message from crabs in the bucket saying, you've got to stay with us in our insanity, in our weakness. And what occurred to me is that those 1.6 billion people, the ones who lived, and you know, you'd have to make a determination for your own family system, but the ones who lived in hostility and fear of those 1.6 billion people are the crabs in the bucket. And if you try to rise above the average state of expression of those crabs in your bucket, they're going to drag you back down. And if you have people in that 1.6 billion who lived as aliveness, who lived as human beings, who lived with determination and truth and the active presence of love, then you have that to lift you up. Now, just take a look around at your local family system. Look at mom, dad, aunts, uncles, grandparents, great-grandparents, cousins, sisters, brothers, ancestors that you know of. Where did they live? Were they crabs in the bucket, or were they standing outside the bucket to lend a hand to anybody who was stuck in it and lift them into the greatness of human life? If you hold a newborn baby, you recognize that that newborn essence is love, and our birthright is to live as that and to be uplifted to that. You know, the single purpose of this show is to provide tools and support for people to be uplifted to that on a global scale. And the conversation I was having with this young lady this morning, someone of what I consider to be very high integrity and moving forward in her life, but finding her own non-being mind dragging her into inadequacy and weakness and I'm not good enough. And I'm the one who pulls everybody down. Now, watching her, I know that's not true about her. There's an aspect of her that that's true about, but I know that's not who she is, just from observation and then knowing that we're each creations of active present love. Of course, that's not true about anybody. But if the non-being mind, if the generational patterns, if the generational energies are filled with that hostility and fear-based self, then it's going to tend to drag our awareness down to its level. And it's time to begin to use denial properly, and that is to deny the multi-generational patterns based in hostility or fear and the effect of those things on oneself, and then to use forgiveness to remove yourself from them, to be freed from them. That, in a nutshell, is what this work is about. So if you have crabs in your bucket is this multi-generational body-mind unit that when the circumstances are right resonates some form of hostility or fear, and the tendency is to be dragged down to that, then forgiveness is the tool with which to collapse and free yourself from that. And that is what we're here to do, is to create support for that, to create understanding for that, to build the brain cells. One of the things that I often get to appreciate from these years of work that I've done is that something happens and I have the brain cells to understand what it is. You know, if you've ever looked at, maybe you've looked at a picture or something on a television screen, and your brain's racing, going, what is that? What is that? I don't know what it is. I can't see it. I can't understand it. And there's a thing that in psychology is called premature cognitive commitment. You know, I've done research with people where they'll take an object and have it perspective-wise, so far away you can hardly see it. And people look at it and look at it and look at it, analyze it, and they can't tell what it is. It's too far away. But they move it closer, and they move it closer, and they move it closer. Let's say maybe it's a refrigerator. And someone looks and looks, and it's still way off in the distance, and they go, Oh, that's a stove. Another person doesn't know what it is, and finally it gets close enough to go, oh, that's a refrigerator. So, you know, let's just pick a number, not relative to any fact, but just a number. So the person who has no idea what it is, at 300 feet gets a clear picture, their brain is able to recognize the pattern and produce a reality that matches it, then go, that's a refrigerator. The person who at 400 feet said, no, that's a stove, even though their eyes are as good and their brain works as well as the person beside them, when the thing gets to 300 feet, they'll still keep saying it's a stove. And it gets to 275 feet, and they'll say it's a stove. And it gets to 250, and it gets to 200 feet, and they say it's a stove. It's premature cognitive commitment. Ah, that's what that is. And once they've categorized it, the thing's going to have to get maybe to 100 feet away before they go, oh, that was an error. It's a refrigerator. Remember that in order for your mind to make sense of anything, you have to have the brain cells for it. If you have no brain cells, you can't recognize what it is. And if your brain cells say it's one thing, and you commit to that as your perceptual construct, it will take far more energy to break that down and get the truth than it would if you'd made no commitment and you waited till it got to 300 feet and you could clearly see what it was. Everybody can clearly see at 300 feet it's a refrigerator. But the person who at 400 feet said, no, it was a stove, going to say it's a stove for a long time before they make the shift to truth. Our offering here is that everything you have a premature cognitive commitment to that's based in hostility or fear is a lie. You look at another person and you make an assessment out of your brain cells as to what's true about that person. Now, when your brain cells serve that information up to you, your brain cells are telling you about your own mind, not about the person you think you're looking at. And when you make that premature cognitive commitment about another, you really, what appears to be another, you're really talking about the content of your own mind. And our offering is, if it's based in hostility or fear, then you need some deep correction. People become judge, jury, and executioner over their perception and insisting that their perception is true about someone else has no idea why and how it is that they push people away. All the good intentions in the world, if you play that game, won't help in getting close and having people connect to you. But here's what will. If you might find your mind serving something up based in hostility or fear, and you forgive, you will give up your commitment to that, and a different truth will become apparent. That's where there's room for apology, correction. Now, the opposite of apology in that situation is, no, I'm going to push you away. There's something wrong with you. I'll try to force you to be fixed, or I will choose to get rid of you. And that's the mind that lives in fear. And the mind that lives in fear has a filter set that everything it looks at, the mind produces a threat-based reality for it. That's why 2,000 years ago when they said to Yeshua, what's most important in the law, he didn't say love your neighbor. He didn't say love the creator. He said have rachma, have this filter set that keeps your mind on track with love. So, if you've got crabs in your bucket, generations of hostility and fear, we're here to stand outside and support those in you that are there to offer you a hand that would raise you up out of the bucket, and we're there to offer you that hand and support the other hands that are in you that know the truth about you. To me, it was just a neat metaphor for the process of doing one's work. And Miss Jeannie, we had Susan with us yesterday, and I think there was some conversation to be continued. So I wonder if Susan is there and if we have more to talk about, young lady.
She is here, so I'll turn her microphone on. Welcome.
Hey. Hi. Yep, I'm here.
Welcome, young lady. How are you this morning, this afternoon?
Fine. How are you, and how's your awareness? How's your vacation?
It is wonderful. Krista, my daughter, and her husband arrived about dinner time last night with the two children. Adeline is now 10. She's been circling years for 10 years. And Avery, who we just met about, what, 5 or 6 months ago, is now about a year and a half. So we just kind of huddled together last night and had fun, just hung out. It was nice. And had breakfast this morning and came over to do the show. So
great.
Good. We've still got lots of snow. It's cold here. Yesterday I unloaded, or the day before yesterday, I unloaded the car in 70-degree temperatures. And it's now, I think, 19 or 20 out. So it's a change.
Day before yesterday.
Ouch. Yeah, we got it. I got it. It was day before yesterday, right, Jeannie?
Yeah.
Yeah, time goes fast. Well,
it does.
Right. I don't remember which thing we were talking about. We were talking about one thing that really struck me is do your worksheets even when an issue isn't up, when there's no upset. So
right.
I dutifully did a worksheet this morning, and it's a Hydra. I ended up realizing that I have an 8-plus level of upset. Ended with a 6-7 upset because there were so many Hydras. So I'm tail between my legs because I haven't been doing, just because the issue isn't up there, it's right under the surface. And as soon as I wrote it down, all this stuff came up. I'm telling that, you know that, but I'm telling that to anybody listening because you think you're fine. You're not so fine, probably. There's always something there. So,
well, it sounds like you uncovered some of the crabs in the bucket.
I did.
That would be another term for a hydra, really. So I've uncovered some of these old generational patterns that want to drag me back in. And I shouldn't really say want because there's no wanter there. It's just that their inertia is to keep going with whatever they're based in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But
so that's awesome if you uncovered that many other worksheets, and that's the benefit of doing the work while you're in a peaceful place.
Right, because I stayed peaceful. I mean, it hurt, but, I mean, I got up and I didn't have all this anxiety and depression. I was feeling great. So you can do the work and not pull yourself under. I guess that's another plug for doing it even though you're not upset. You're not going to end up being upset because you did it. You can go into it and then come out of it.
You can stay on top of the mountain. You don't have to get all the way down into the valley before you do your work. And down in the valley, it's a whole lot harder to claw your way back up.
Right. Tim and I had a lot of discussions about what you said about evil being the absence of darkness. And that, well, you know, the flash dark. And that caused a little shift in him. I wish I could get him in here. He may be busy on something. Let me check, Michael. Let me just put the phone down.
Sure, go for it.
Study and see if I can.
Absolutely. We'll hold.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Tim. I'll do it as best I can with that.
Well, he doesn't want to do it right now, but I would
That's cool.
Pursue it. He was afraid he was going to have another one of those nightmares and didn't. So, but the discussions about evil and the nature of evil, this is just so interesting, and I'm not sure where to take it. Now, accept that if I act from the standpoint of
having some control, not control, but taking responsibility for whatever is out there instead of saying there's a demon out there that I have no control over, I'm a lot better off.
So. Right. Well, my input to Tim at this point would be, Tim, it is most desirable for you to have this dream come again. And here's would be my input to him, that just like perception can seem to be run away with no way of controlling it or changing it, mm-hmm. if you have the tools, perception can be collapsed, rewritten, and restructured. Dreams are no different. Dreams come from exactly the same place as most people's so-called waking reality. It comes mm-hmm. just from the firing of brain cells. You know, most people walk through the day in a sleep, in a maze, and whatever their mind serves up, you know, this, that, oh, that person's nasty, that person's hateful, this person, poop, on it goes. And love isn't present, so there doesn't seem to be any control. Having mm-hmm. forgiveness, we can change those perceptions. In exactly the same way, dreams come from the same process of the firing of brain cells, and, you know, we can, with practice, like anything else, I mean, you know, I'm sure the first time Tim went into the courtroom, he wasn't the lawyer that he is now if he went into the courtroom. Because practice, of course, develops skills. But with practice, mm-hmm. he could, my invitation would be that he could invite that dream to come and to have it teach him and show him what it is that it wants to show him, rather than just frightened by it, rather than just bringing fear up. It's like, so why are you here? What are you here to teach me? What am I here to resolve? And use it as a tool for resolution, even in the dream. Because it's his
That's
dream,
cool.
it's his perception, and it's totally changeable, totally malleable.
Mm.
Jeannie talks about a time when she was having a dream, and there was somebody, she had a conflict going on within the dream, and she threatened to wake up. She realized she was in a dream, and she threatened the conflict, you know, the person who's in conflict. I'll wake up if you don't stop. It stopped.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah, that's very funny. Yeah, there is a place in sleep and in dream where you are aware that you're dreaming, but you're still dreaming. That is so weird.
Yes.
Yes. So, yesterday, Tim and I went for a walk, and I said, how about we fool around with this dream character, this dark thing? And I said, how about we do a gestalt exercise? You pick, but I'm happy to be Tim Bingham, and you be the devil. You be the dark guy. And you tell me about yourself and tell me what you want. And he had a lot to say.
Really?
He should have written it down. Yeah, he did have a lot to say.
Not too late.
Yeah. Well, we were walking in the cold, and it's bitter cold, just like you. It's 20 here.
Mm.
So, anyway, we'll go for another walk, and maybe I'll tell him then, yeah, to invite the dream. He was afraid the dream might come back, and I'll say, Michael says to invite it back.
Yeah, I want it, and I want to walk right into it, you know. Walk
mm-hmm.
right. It, the course talks about, you know, the world that appears solid, but then when you question it, it all of a sudden just goes away like a wisp of smoke.
Yeah.
And in the presence of love, that's what happens.
Well, that's the thing. Wow. To always, and that's been the challenge with my worksheet, is I got scared when I was talking to Jacob and he heard the fear and felt attacked. Because I was trying to fix him, make suggestions. It wasn't good, and now he's still not talking to me. But I'm just waiting, doing nothing really except holding him in my heart, hoping he'll loosen up. And his mother's not there, so he's holding down the fort at home by himself, which is an added challenge. Anyway.
Well, and of course, to recognize that, you know, in that interaction, what I heard you describing is an old pattern came up for you. I'm bad. I'm wrong. I did it improperly. And that's just another mm-hmm. voice in you, one of the crabs, pulling you back down. That's just another voice to be forgiven. I came across, I was thinking about you this morning. I was doing some reading in the Course in Miracles. I came across a lesson in the thought that really struck me very powerfully from our conversation yesterday was, peace is impossible to those who look on war.
Oh, wow.
Peace is inevitable to those who offer peace. And when I hear you describe what your mind told you you did, your perceptual construct was one of war. And you weren't offering yourself nor Jacob peace. And so, you know, as a creator, remembering that perception is a construct of the mind, as a creator, we've got to realize that what we look upon, we create. You know, what you see is inevitable.
Yeah.
And then to remember that every time I see a world where somebody is condemned by my mind, I'm the creator of that condemnation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can bring forward the active presence of love, or as the Course says in this particular passage, peace, then when I offer my own perception, my own construct of self, my own conflicted mind peace, then I become a creator of peace. So if I can correct, pardon me, if I can correct my seeing to look beyond the error, you know, again, question everything that's based in hostility or fear because it's all a lie. If it comes from the mind, the past, the crab bucket, and it's based in hostility or fear, it's always a lie. And so what do I want to do? I want to use words, even the words that the Course says of darkness, to prove that the darkness is a lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I can correct my seeing and look beyond the error and literally deliver love, deliver truth, then I bring the energy of truth, which is just by definition is correction. But if I believe what I see, quote unquote, I think I see, if I believe my perceptual construct, it's then affirmed and solidified. I've brought it into expression. If I uproot with forgiveness, the error in my belief, the self-condemnation, the self-judgment, in this case, look what I did, I've burned a bridge, and recognizing that what is manifest is out of alignment with truth. Anything based in hostility or fear is out of alignment with truth. You know, 1,000 generations of life experienced out of a lie make the lie manifest, but it doesn't affirm the lie as truth, only an energetic pattern that creates the experience of truth, or pardon me, the appearance and experience of truth. So the lie, my mind says, this is true, but just because it doesn't mean it's true. It just means that the pattern is strong enough. 1,000 generation of crabs living out of that lie brings that particular construct into expression, but because it's an expression doesn't make it true. When I come from that energy that, oh, this is true, when I believe the lie, anything I believe based in hostility or fear, I come from creating out of that energy, and in that space there's no other possibility. But there's always another possibility in forgiveness, because forgiveness collapses the, you know, it doesn't matter how deep or the pinnacle of the appearance, it collapses it in on itself. And where the construct of the mind says, love has now been destroyed, Now, active present love delivers the energy of disassembly, the energy of forgiveness, the taking apart of what's been glued together by a thousand generations of falsely manifested constructs and beliefs, a thousand generations of falsity. Now, what became cause, my conversation, my belief in war, has been interrupted by love. The pattern's been interrupted, and that begins its disassembly. So just, you know, remember that you're seeing, your perception is a product of the firing of brain cells. And whatever comes from brain cells does not exist as anything but an appearance in the mind. And it's up to be disassembled. You know, forgiveness disassembles lies because lies can't stay integrated in the presence of truth and love.
Michael?
So, yes, ma'am.
I don't have the brain cells to translate that into my relationship with Jacob. I feel as if I'm still talking war in my head. I've ruined something. Even Tim said, you burned a bridge.
Okay.
And so, it's...
Notice that others around you have the same brain cells and are willing to join in buying it.
Right.
So now that the mind has a construct based in fear and someone's joined with you in believing it, it's going to seem to become more true. My offering is it's not true. It's just a reinforced pattern disassembled, and it's just a variation. I mean, we've dealt with this issue many times over the years. It's just another issue of self-deprecation. Oh, look what I've done. I screwed it up. How many times have we confronted that one? That lie. And so just in terms of your internal process, recognizing, oh, Jesus, my mind can tell me a thousand stories about what's wrong with me and how I screwed it up, just like the message my power person delivered to me. And it's time for me to stop buying and believing that message.
Mm-hmm.
And when I stop buying and believing that message, another mind becomes available to me. I can think with a different mind. I can think with the mind of Christ, as the Course would say it, the mind of love, rather than this mind of my power person.
And what you're saying is if I can really do that all by myself without Jacob in the picture at all, Jacob will be influenced by that, even if I don't make a phone call or show him anything.
Energetically, there will be a shift.
Yeah.
And the new mind will give you instructions. Here's what an instruction the new mind might look like. Having dissolved this thing of I always screw it up, an old reality that you've played with forever, an old power person message, it might look like a phone call to Jacob or a note to Jacob that says, wow, you know, that conversation we had last week, there's a part of me that thought I destroyed my relationship with you. Like I thought I'd burned a bridge with you. And I realized that it's just my old reality of me screwing up. And I got a powerful piece of healing out of it. Thank you for that interaction. Jacob might just go, wow, you know, I've done that to me so many times. Orb, wow, I'm ready to join you in healing that one. That's a scenario I could see.
Mr. Boone.
And that you now standing outside of your own bucket, reach a hand in to yourself to raise you up out of the crab bucket and to raise your whole family system. Including your husband, who's dealing with this old crab in a dream.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the Course would say to you, Orb, millions yet unborn will benefit from this piece of work that you've done.
I can feel the invitation. I can feel a lot of fear, the idea of speaking to Jacob. And I built a scenario. The crabs are active. In other words, the bucket is full of crabs.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing Jacob say, what the heck is she talking about? She's off her rocker. I don't want anything to do with her anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Orb, your grandson cherishes you beyond belief. You've been such an influence in his life. Are there going to be momentary upsets and things come up? Yeah, but that's all just up for healing. I mean, that young man has received so much care and support and nurturing from you. I think you're giving that belief too much power that he doesn't want anything to do with you ever again. I mean, he's been such a light in that young man's life. And yeah, you might say something that resonates some of his old pain, and then he's going to make a picture of Orb out of his old pain and think, oh, that lady, she's trying to get... And that's just another passing fantasy that needs to be cleaned up. And it'll be cleaned up by the presence of love in you and or in him, and progressively moving forward where you each are able to join that, even when the craziest things come up.
Well, I'm doing a lot of breathing, and it's going to have to be a lot of practicing. I appreciate this, Michael.
Well, I am breathing with you very consciously and very purposely. And it's perfect that breathing is coming up this Saturday.
Are you sending out mind shifters and all the links and stuff?
Yes, yep, we'll be doing it.
Okay.
We'll be doing it.
Yeah.
It'll be on its way.
Great.
So let's go back just to that core thought from the Course to reinforce all of that. Peace is impossible to those who look on war.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that video, What is the World?
Yep.
So remember, the world of perception is a skill made up by me to take the place of what the Creator gave me in creation. I have been structured for generations by a world based in war. And so my perception presents to me a blueprint through which I will shine a light. If the blueprint goes through conflict and war, then I will become a creator of conflict and war.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to shift my posture. The second sentence of that title was, peace is inevitable to those who offer peace. So are you willing to step back to love and offer Orb active present love?
Michael, say
this
before what you just said. Peace is inevitable for those who offer peace.
Correct. So peace is impossible to those who look on war. So if I have a perceptual construct based in conflict, I'm going to empower that. That's going to be what I will manifest, what I will bring about, because it's obvious conflict is the rule here.
Yeah.
So as long as my perceptual construct is based in war, then peace is going to be impossible. However, remember how often, like in the codependency, interdependence intensive, we talked about becoming the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions.
Mm-hmm.
So step apart from this mind structured out of war and conflict. And now, imagining it as a separate being from you, there it is with all its conflict stuff. Imagine that what you now do as the conscious active presence of love is you offer peace to that. You offer active present love to that mind in you. So now peace is inevitable because truth will always win out. You may need to offer it 1,000 times. You may need to offer it 10 times a minute to your own perceptual mind until you're through the 77 times 70 forgiveness process that it will take to dissolve that piece of conflict from your past, from the crab bucket. Inevitable is the word.
Inevitable. I love that word.
Inevitable.
It's out of our hands.
Peace is inevitable to those who offer peace. Because it's the only thing that's really true. The other's based in a lie. You put the light through it and the shadows, and boy, that picture on the screen looks really, really real. There's nothing real about it. It's all based in falsity. But when it comes up and sucks us in, man, it seems like the only thing possible.
Yeah.
Am I willing to offer that part of my mind perfect peace? To come forward as conscious, active, present love to that.
It's almost as if reaching out to Jacob is secondary here. Since I do,
it's your healing
first.
That's it exactly. It's your healing. It's your healing. Yeah, this is, in your interaction with him, the focus has been on him, but really, it's a construct of your mind that it's yours to forgive, that it's yours to remove. And that might look like, canceling the need to be perfect, canceling the need to have said the right words, canceling the needs to know exactly what he needs. They might all be worksheets that you do in the dissolution of this judgment about self. And yeah, that the issue with him is an ancillary issue.
Yeah, I feel a tremendous urgency because I don't know if he's safe from himself. And so, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I still need to do this. I get distracted by this urgency.
Yes. And when you deliver perfect peace to your mind energetically, the instant you do that, it will be delivered to him. And it will enhance his safety and his capacity. Because he knows how much you care for him. Yeah, you've aroused a construct in his mind based in probably some power person dynamics, maybe with his dad or whatever. And that's, there's been distrust after distrust after distrust. But under it all, he knows who you are in his life.
I hope so. Yeah, there's a doubt there.
I don't hope so. I don't hope so. I know it. I know it. I
well,
once had
on.
A grandmother. And I know how important
funny.
She is in my life and is there for eternity. It doesn't matter what. Even though there may be momentary blips in my perception and I think it's about her. You've been such a gift to that young man and have such caring for him.
True.
And notice the gift that his misperception that you're doing something bad to him has given you this healing opportunity.
You're right.
You almost think the whole world was designed just for that, wouldn't you?
That would really be a blown up ego thing, and yet I understand exactly what you're saying. It's like, it's all for me, it's all for me.
Yeah.
And it is.
Well, and it is. It is all for you, and it is all for every point of life in the creation. So right at this point, 6 billion
right.
points of light, and for the one who has something up for healing, it's all for them. And for you, and
mm-hmm.
for you, and for you, and for me, and it's like one does not exclude the other. That it's
right.
all for you doesn't exclude that it's all for 7.5 billion of us.
I got it.
That's where the Course says millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do. Because when you come against that energetic dynamic, that energetic wall that's so common on the earth and so believed in, and you break through it, you just weakened the wall for everybody.
Yeah, the huge temptation is always to go outside myself to say, well, I hope he realizes it, and then we can have a talk. But nothing is contingent on anything but what I do with my own work. Holy crap. That's hard to – it's hard to stay in my own corral here.
Well, take a look. You know, just turn on the news. I don't care what station you tune into, and you're going to hear about somebody blaming somebody else for something. You know, it's kind of like the dynamic of the game in the world. So, you know, that's,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's basically what we've been exposed to all our lives.
Yeah.
And we've been exposed to a lie. So now we dissolve the next layer of a lie. And imagine if you can, you know, deliver this to your mind. Imagine if you can a world where anybody who's in any form of disturbance or upset, the instant they become aware of that upset, starts to language their responsibility for their upset and their willingness to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, now that's a radical thought.
It is.
And guess what? We can go there. We can get there. We are getting there. So breathing with you.
That's what I've been doing. You say something and it's not even intelligible. And I know it's true and I'm going, and then it becomes.
Well, unfortunately, we have an archive.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome. Well, any other thoughts for you for this new year, young lady?
Well, I'm letting go of doing the Course in Miracles every day, partly because I've done the lessons every day for several years, partly because of something Corinne Zupko said in a blog she wrote about how after many, many years of doing the Course in Miracles and teaching it and being a student of it and so forth, she heard in her mind or somehow that Jesus said, okay, now you just stop that and start getting direct messages. Start listening. Cut that little tether. You've often said or reminded us that in a part of the Course in Miracles, it says, give up this book. This book isn't it.
Yep, throw it away.
Yeah, so
you know the objective. You know, go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and I don't have an exact quote, but basically says you can deny me, that's okay, but I came to connect you with the Spirit of Truth. You deny that, and you're in trouble. You know, the
mm-hmm.
real teacher is right there inside of each of us.
Yeah,
and community helps us to open the pathway to that real teacher.
Right. Right, and it's nice to have the radio show, especially since I'm letting go of this other mooring. But I am going to do the Way of Mastery again as my morning reading. But it is exciting to think that I have direct access, which I've sort of thought of, but it's really now it's saying, just ask. The answer will be right there.
That's right. That's the whole idea, you know. People get hooked on and teachers get hooked on. Well, but I am the teacher. It's like, no.
Right.
The inner tutor, the intuition, that's the teacher that it's all supposed to be pointing us toward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we get to be actually alive as true humans.
Nice.
It's all direct. So any other thoughts for you today, young lady?
No, thank you, Michael. I'll just hang out till the rest of the show and maybe somebody else wants to talk.
All right. Honored and delighted. We appreciate you and hold the space for both of you to be having the best year yet of your eternal lives. Cherish you.
Thanks. Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
You too.
All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 9 minutes, 8 minutes left. You have another hand up?
Actually, we do have a hand up, but we also have a question from the app. And
this
is from someone in Finland. And so one of the parts is I'm going to have to ask him. He says when he types in it that his letters don't show up in the box, and it probably has to do with him typing with a different kind of
foreign
letter than the alphabet.
Yeah,
so
alphabet,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, right.
So I'll have to check on that. But anyway, he says, the letters I type don't show up in the boxes of the app, but I copy it over into my notes app. So I have done several worksheets with pretty good success. However, I've never felt like I have gotten into the direct experience with the denied and dissociated energy. Also, I almost never feel, and he's got that capitalized, the presence and the energy of the entity Rukka, though I somehow feel that perhaps it's there somewhere. Every time in the sheet, I just kind of slide through the part where Rukka comes in and the part of I now feel, and it seems to come up quickly. I wish that I would get a more powerful experience out of this. Do you have any thoughts?
Yes. The process is one where when we're used to listening to the non-being mind, the voice of the ego, and we have been taught by generations to shut down, ignore, and pretend that that other voice doesn't exist, then there's a time period where it doesn't exist for us. And I'll share from my personal experience. You know, one of the courses that we've done in our intensives is intuitive development. And I can remember the first time that I started to work with intuition, and it came across kind of as a metaphor, but I became aware that I was looking almost like I'm looking straight ahead, and I realized now that what I was doing was looking at my perception as the truth. And then I just shifted my eyes slightly to the left. And all of a sudden, I became aware there was a whole other treasure trove of information I had ignored and not paid attention to, like pretended it wasn't there. It's almost like, you know, and right now what I'm doing physically is like I'm putting my hand up like a block in front of my eyes, pretending that stuff over there on the left isn't there. And I realized that I'd spent my whole life training myself to look ahead and not look there. So soften, you know, breathe, soften your gaze a little bit and invite that other information in. Acknowledge it, even though it sounds like you have a sense of it, but you don't have an experience of it yet. And as you invite it in, and as you quiet the voice of perception of the non-being mind by canceling the goal, that energy will tend to become, from my experience, stronger and more available. So that would be my input. Your sense of it is it's there, and it is. you just haven't given yourself permission yet to look at it, to be with it. And so that would be my input, is to recognize that your sense is there. And oftentimes, and this is an instruction that I give when we do an intuitive development workshop, I'll instruct people, or I'll let people know, that when your intuition first starts to work, it will seem and feel like you're making it up. Go ahead and let yourself make it up. And what you'll find out is you're making up true stories. And basically, our intuitive development intensive is one where we pair people up in the workshop and we give them assignments to gather information in a way other than they normally do, in a way other than they normally do with their intellect and their perception. So, and then to take that which they've received and share it with their partner. And what happens is they start sharing true stories with their partner, and their partner is freaked. It's like, how did you know that? Well, I don't know. I just kind of made it up. And what will happen is, if you do that, you'll start to get a sense. You know, you get enough of that feedback. We do this as a 9-day intensive. You get enough of that feedback, and then you go, that's okay. Now I got it. Yes, it feels like I'm making up, but this is what it feels like when it's true. Oh, I got it. And you get to the point where you just trust it. And then you put it out. And you get feedback. Oh, my God, how did you know that? Where did you get that piece of information? Your mind will say you made it up, but it was actually your intuition coming in, because the mind has been trained to deny the intuition. So I hope that helps. And if any other refinements are needed, it'll be a delight to have more conversation with you. And you can Skype into the show so that we can have a conversation on Skype as well at some point. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 2 here. I think in Sweden, Finland, you're about 6 hours later. So perhaps one evening you'll give us a call. Is that
awesome?
Give a complete answer, Sweden?
I think so. Hopefully then they'll write back. I'm sending them an email telling them to check the last 7 minutes of the show today for the response, and told them I would check with their developer. I'm assuming it's because he's typing with the Finnish alphabet that somehow the app isn't recognizing it, but I'll find out. So we're down to about a minute and a half. We do have a hand up, but I don't know if there's time to catch it. If you want to try, we can run the clock out.
Well, I'll just say that I'm glad that he had the brain cells to be able to copy and paste it so he could get the information to us, and we'll look into that. And by the way, for anybody who's got the app, just be aware that, you know, when you're in the app, there's a button on every page. You can just push it and ask an instant question, just like this one. That's the first one we've had since you put that feature in. And we are down to 1 minute. I'm not sure that, you know, starting another conversation would be very workable, but perhaps if you make note of the number, we can start out the show tomorrow. If whoever has their hand up, if we could start out with that, if you put your hand up, we'll make sure Jeannie has a note of the number and taps in, and you'll be our first conversation tomorrow. In the meantime, everybody, it's a new year. Have an awesome one. The best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.